In reality television, the people are represented by two separate but equally obsessed attorneys. This is their podcast.
Hi, I'm Ceci.
And I'm Angela.
And this is the Bravo Docket.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Bravo Docket. What can I say except it's been a crazy week in the Bravoverse. Like, my goodness.
It's so much.
It's so much. I mean, this was not even on our radar at all. Like, what we're recording today was not on our radar.
No.
Like, we had a list going.
I was working on three different episodes at once and was really excited about continuing my research for the deep dive episodes into the Erica Jane Marco thing. And then what was it? Leah's lawsuit came out.
Yeah. And then Brandy made the accusations against Andy.
Oh my God. And then this one.
Yeah. Rachel filed a lawsuit against Sandoval and Ariana.
They need to cool it with the lawsuits until we get caught up. No more.
No, they could keep going, but just don't expect that we're going to be able to cover them immediately. Hopefully that's okay with everyone that we can't cover them right away, and we'll get to them eventually. I'm happy for things to keep coming out.
No, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, gives us stuff to talk about. So yeah, but where do we start? Where do we begin? She filed this lawsuit a few days ago. It's against Tom Sandoval, Ariana Madix, and then Does 1 through 50, and we'll explain what that means in a little bit.
Thank you, Bravo Buds, for that really cute post sending up the bat signal for us. And we saw your comments and support on Reddit. And we are just really grateful that everyone trusts us so much and wants to hear what we have to say. So we rescheduled what we were doing, dropped everything, and got prepared for this episode.
So what do you remember about, fun fact, today is the 1 year anniversary of Scandaball.
That's today. Crazy.
Right now when we're recording this Sunday, March 3rd.
Yeah.
Today's a 1 year anniversary.
Wow.
So, obviously we remember a lot from Scandoval generally, but what do you remember about the video specifically? Like, I remember what came out was that Ariana saw this video of something intimate between Tom and Raquel or Rachel. And then that is how she found out that this affair was going on. And then somehow other cast members learned about the video as well. And then sent a cease and desist letter out. That's all I remember. I don't remember specifics of whether it was sent to someone, like what happened in terms of that. What do you remember?
What I remembered was that there were so many unsubstantiated rumors coming out of how Ariana found out. And then we were shocked because this was the first time, I think, where we had seen a bunch of blind items and then they were immediately confirmed. But I had to go back and look at an August 16, 2023 Rolling Stone article where Rachel stated what happened because I couldn't remember exactly. She said that the FaceTime call occurred in March 2023. When she was in New York doing press for Vanderpump. And she said, quote, "I decided to be adventurous and look at the adult section on the TV. And Tom and I FaceTimed a lot, so it turned into something more of an intimate FaceTime. I expected to have privacy in that moment, so that happened." And then according to this Rolling Stone article, Rachel said she spent the following day doing press and feeling on top of the world, only to suddenly receive a text from Maddox that contained, quote, two screen recorded videos and a text that said, "You're dead to me." And according to this article, that's how Rachel learned that Ariana knew about the affair. And it's also how she learned that she had, quote, been recorded without my consent. And then I remember the immediate cease and desist letter, which turned into the send it to Daryl. Isn't that what precipitated the send it to Daryl? And then she went on in this Rolling Stone article from 2023. Rachel said that she sent an immediate cease and desist letter to keep the video from spreading, but suggested a lot of people had still seen it. Quote, some of Ariana's friends have described the video in great detail online, and she also sent it to me, so I don't know who else she sent it to. I wouldn't be surprised if she sent it to other people, but it's not legal, end quote.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. To be fair, she could have just told everyone what was in the video, and that's how they know, but I mean, we don't know. So some little fun things that I remembered as this lawsuit came out. So August 19th, we were trying to put out content where we just explain little legal concepts without necessarily it being tied to a specific lawsuit. So we did a post on one party and two party consent states. And obviously it stemmed from this situation, but again, we didn't know the details of it. So it was just sort of like if this is what happened, then here's the law so you guys know. And we made that on August 19th. And then Rachel followed us a few days later on August 21st. And I was like, oh, she maybe saw this post. And then she filed the lawsuit February 29, 2024. So I found that to be interesting.
Yeah. When you put that together, I was like, whoa.
Yeah. Anyway, so one of the first questions that I saw was what a Doe lawsuit is. And because this lawsuit, like I mentioned, is Rachel against defendants Tom Sandoval, Ariana Maddox, and then Does 1 through 50. And people were like, what are Does? Like, what does that mean? Does that really mean that there are 50 other people involved in this? And that's not necessarily true. And just a reminder, neither of us are barred to practice in California. I took the California bar, but that doesn't mean I'm a licensed attorney here yet.
You did pass, though.
You did pass
first try.
Yeah. And we're barred in different states. However, we have the ability to look this stuff up. And under California Code of Civil Procedure 474, if you don't know the name or identity of a defendant, you can still name them in the complaint by naming them as a Doe. So it's a stand-in name like John Doe, Jane Doe, for an unknown defendant. The benefit of doing that is that if there's a statute of limitations with a claim that you're trying to bring, which is like the timeline by which you have to bring the claim, even though you don't know the defendant's identity yet, you can put it in as a placeholder and then not waive that timeline. So not, you know, have the timeline run out before you figure out their identity. So as you figure out the names, then you can amend the complaint and add them as named defendants in the complaint. And that usually comes out through the discovery process. I imagine in this instance, should it get into discovery, Rachel will want to get discovery on whether people did receive that and if they then sent it to other people. So then she can amend the lawsuit and add them as named defendants for violating the laws, mm-hmm. as we'll get into them. So, here's an example that I got from the World Wide Web. Just this has nothing to do with this case, but imagine like a personal injury case where you go in for surgery and you come out and you have a sponge left in your stomach after surgery and you are out. So you have no idea the names of the surgeon or the surgeon's assistant or the nurses. I mean, hopefully you know the name of your surgeon, but maybe the assistants, and you don't know necessarily who left the sponge in. This is a way you can, you know, put in a placeholder until you figure out who was at fault. So. And then some other questions I saw, and I don't know if you saw these too, but this came out, I think, both in connection with Leah's lawsuit against Andy and Bravo, and then in this lawsuit as well. How can people make accusations that seem kind of outlandish in a complaint and not get sued for defamation? Or how can you just put anything into a complaint? And that is because of litigation privilege. So most states, and again, we're just talking about California here, have the litigation privilege, and it immunizes conduct that is reasonably related to the litigation, even if the conduct is alleged to be fraudulent, perjurious, unethical, or even illegal. So, for example, the accusation that Leah made about Andy Cohen, that he does cocaine with some of the housewives. The public policy behind all of this is to protect witnesses from being afraid from facing liability for providing testimony. You don't want there to be an instance where a witness is afraid to take the stand and provide helpful information for fear of repercussions. It's also to avoid one lawsuit stemming into additional amount of lawsuits, because if you could sue for every statement that you think is defamatory that comes out from litigation, then you could sue potentially every witness. And then that leads to a waste of judicial resources. It can blossom into many, many lawsuits. So it's a way to protect witnesses and it's a way to save judicial resources. But that doesn't mean you are not without any recourse. It doesn't mean you can say whatever you want in a lawsuit. It has to be reasonably related to the litigation. And then there is recourse, like we'll talk about, on of like what you could do if you think it's just completely legally unsubstantiated or just completely prejudicial. It applies to communications made in judicial or quasi-judicial proceedings. So it can be statements. It could be things by litigants or other participants authorized by law, communications to achieve the objects of the litigation and that have some connection or logical relation to the action. And so it can apply to cease and desist letters. It can apply to if you're telling someone, hey, there's a lawsuit going on, you should probably stop selling this product, things like that. Mm-hmm. That all falls under the litigation privilege, the complaint. So for a lawyer, it can be kind of a tool to get people to settle, because if you can put anything that is reasonably related to the litigation, that's kind of broad. So you can say a lot in a complaint and not have any real repercussions. And it can be a tool to get the other person to just end the lawsuit so nothing else comes out. You know what I mean?
I mean, to be clear, lawyers have an ethical duty to do some due diligence and not just take everything a client says at face value and to make sure that they're not just purposely and intentionally filing false or scandalous materials. You
of
know.
Course.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there has to be like some legitimacy for the claim. But if it has something to do with it, you can put it in.
I think California's is just really strong. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So then like one thing that you can do is you can move to strike portions of the complaint. So anything that's irrelevant, false, improper, or legally insufficient, as long as you have proof that it's false, improper, legally insufficient. That's where anti-slap motions come in. You can file an anti-slap motion, which is a form. It's an example of a motion to strike. You can also, if you have proof that someone's lying on the stand, that's committing perjury. So you can pursue charges for committing perjury. So that's another form of recourse, but it has to be untrue.
As a lawyer, you also have an ethical duty to not put anyone on the stand that you know is going to provide false testimony.
Correct. Yeah. So that's the litigation privilege. But I think the questions that came out, and to be completely honest, I have not read the complaint all the way through, but I know that there are allegations made of Lisa Vanderpump and I think James, and people are like, well, they're not even in this lawsuit. Why can she get away saying this stuff if it's unrelated? And we'll get to that. And I haven't read it, so we'll provide our opinions when we get through there.
She also, you know, accuses Bravo of some conduct as well. So,
and they're not even named defendants. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. So I thought it would be helpful to go over the law or have the law in our heads before we read through the complaint so that you guys can be seeing whether or not when reading this, you think that these laws have been violated or that there's liability here. Do you want to start with the eavesdropping code?
Yes. And who is the eavesdropping against? Is that just against Tom?
Yeah. So that's just against Tom and then Does 1 through 50. Again, she put Does 1 through 50 for every cause of action because who knows who else was involved?
Right.
Like maybe Schwartz eavesdropped. Who knows? Who knows?
We're not saying he did.
We're not saying he did. Right. Right. And I guess to start, California does have really strong laws, litigation privilege, and then also privacy. They have really strong consumer privacy laws. This one's eavesdropping and it's called the California Invasion of Privacy Act. But if you guys get those pop-ups where it's like, accept the cookies, which I think anytime you go to a new website, you probably get that. European websites do it. California also does it. So any business that does business in California that has a website has to have that up because of California's really strong privacy laws.
Yeah. So to establish the eavesdropping claim, Rachel would have to prove that Tom intentionally recorded, and the jury instructions say conversation, by using an electronic device, and that Rachel had a reasonable expectation that the conversation was not being overheard or recorded, and that Tom did not have the consent of all parties to the conversation to record it, and that Rachel was harmed, and that Tom's conduct was a substantial factor in causing Rachel's harm.
Right. This is how you get recourse for the two-party consent. Because California is a two-party consent state, which means both parties have to consent to being recorded. And this is the statute that codifies that. So,
and a lot of states are not.
Which is crazy. We've been talking about it at work because of all this. And it's like, why even have a law that, like, that's not one party consent, that just record everything you want, you know? So the penalties for this, you can have the defendant pay $5,000 in statutory.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Legal team, have you guys been on Quince's website recently? I shopped on there like 3 years ago for the first time and bought myself a bunch of cashmere sweaters. I lived in the black cashmere sweater. Lived in it. And I hadn't shopped on there for a while because my cashmere sweaters lasted for a really long time. But I decided to go back on there and oh my gosh, have they completely expanded everything that they offer. The workwear, they have washable silk. And I mean, it's so affordable. I also shared with you all that I'm recently engaged and I'm in the middle of wedding planning. So anytime I'm shopping, I'm thinking about wedding. And they have everything I need for the wedding. I just booked my honeymoon. We're going to go to Southeast Asia. It's going to be hot there. And I've been looking for good linen pieces. Guess what? Quince has good linen pieces and they start at only $30. Then I'm like, okay, we need to get our wedding bands. You know who has fine jewelry now? 14 karat gold. Quince. So I send the link to Avery and I'm like, you have to get your wedding band from here. It's affordable and it looks just like any other wedding band. I mean, it looks great. Another thing I'm doing, again, I have a wedding on the brain. I want to look my best. So I'm like, okay, I really want cute little matching sets to go work out in. It's the only way I can get motivated. I have to like wear a cute little matching set. I've gotten really into Pilates. And guess what? Quince has the matching sets. They look identical to matching sets I've already purchased from another sports brand. They have the same thing. And at a fraction of the cost, I was able to get two tops and one pair of pants for the same price that I could only get one set at this other sportswear place. I mean, come on. Quince is just killing it. If you've shopped there before, it's time to go back on again. They have just completely expanded the categories of goods that they have to offer. They're not just all about cashmere sweaters anymore. They have got a ton of stuff, and I highly recommend you go check it out. If you're ready to go try out Quince, go to quince.com/docket to get free shipping and 365-day returns. That is quince.com/docket to get free shipping and 365-day returns. That is an amazing guarantee on their goods. So go check it out. I highly recommend it, guys.
Free damages for each illegally recorded conversation or 3 times the actual economic damages you suffered because of the privacy breach.
That's a lot.
It'll be interesting to see if it gets that far, how she's going to set a value to that. But even still, you could still get $5,000 for every time it happened. So, all right, let's talk about the next one.
So the next one is what is colloquially referred to as the revenge porn cause of action. And it says a private cause of action lies against a person who intentionally distributes by any means a photograph, film, videotape, recording, or any other reproduction of another without that person's consent if, one, the person knew or reasonably should have known that the other person had a reasonable expectation that the material would remain private, two, the distributed material exposes an intimate body part of the other person or shows the other person engaging in an act of intercourse, oral copulation, sodomy, or other act of sexual penetration, and three, the other person suffers general or special damages as further described in the section. And then distribute. This law was recently changed in California due to a case where a woman, her boyfriend or ex-boyfriend, had nude pictures of her and he blew them up and put them on his truck and drove it around town. I'm not kidding. I was researching this and I was like, oh my God. So September 30th, 2022, Governor Newsom signed a bill expanding the previous revenge porn legislation to include public displays of intimate images without consent. And they stated victims of revenge porn are harassed, humiliated, and traumatized, sometimes for a lifetime. That's why I wanted to close this loophole. And they said, for example, in Shasta County, a victim discovered an enlarged naked image of herself on the side of an ex-boyfriend's truck. And she could not seek protection under the current revenge porn statute because the image was not distributed according to the statute, but it was instead publicly displayed. Can you imagine?
Yeah. I mean, that is not what I think she's alleging here.
No, but yeah. So distribute now means it includes exhibiting in public or giving possession. And there are exceptions to that, but it specifically states that distribution can't be a matter of public concern or public interest solely because the depicted individual is a public figure, because there's some exceptions to this and they specifically stated that even if you're on TV or whatever, if you're a public figure, that doesn't make it a matter of public concern.
So a lot of the questions I think we've been getting have been, does it count as a distribution if we're just saying this is an example, we don't know if this happened, if Ariana sent it from Tom's phone to her phone, and then if Ariana sent it from her phone to Rachel's phone, that's a distribution, right? I mean, my gut feeling is that is a distribution.
If she sends it to herself?
Yeah. She's sending it from someone else's phone to her phone.
Yeah. Exhibiting in public or giving possession.
She's giving herself possession of something that she didn't have.
Yeah. If she sent it to her own phone.
Mm-hmm. And then sending it to Rachel's phone, that's also a distribution in my opinion, because Rachel didn't even know it existed. So she's now getting possession of something.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I think this is going to be, depending on like how all the facts come out, I think this is going to end up getting litigated. It does say a person intentionally distributes an image described in subparagraph A when that person personally distributes the image.
Can you reread that?
Yeah. A person intentionally distributes an image described in subparagraph A when that person personally distributes the image.
Mm-hmm. All right. Some exceptions to this is if the distributed material was created under an agreement by the person appearing in the material for its public use and distribution, or otherwise intended by that person for public use and distribution. So I assume that's like pornography that you wanted to make. The second one is if you have permission from the person in the material. Number three is if that person waived any reasonable expectation of privacy in the distributed material by making it accessible to the general public. So it's like if you posted it yourself. If it constitutes a matter of public concern, which you just told us that doesn't necessarily apply to someone who just happens to be a public figure, then if the material was photographed, filmed, videotaped, recorded, or otherwise reproduced in a public place and under circumstances in which the person depicted had no reasonable expectation of privacy. So I guess if they're like up on stage. I'm trying to come up with examples. These aren't the best.
Well, no, I mean, I think if you are on a live and doing it and then someone else screen records it, or if you post it yourself on your Snap stories or something.
Right, right. Yeah. Or if you're on a stage. And then number six, the distributed material was previously distributed by another person. Unless the plaintiff served on the defendant by certified mail a notice to cease distribution of the material and the defendant failed to cease distribution within 20 days of receiving the notice.
I think that's just giving notice. So if you, for example, if you thought it was okay to have it, I mean, I feel like that's probably the intent of that. If you have a website that does this sort of thing and you thought that it was recorded consensually and then you get the letter informing you that it's not, then you have 20 days to get everything down so that you're not liable just because you didn't know.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
This is not legal advice. I'm just
No. We're just giving our thoughts on the statute. And then the penalties here.
Yeah. So the court can order equitable relief against the person violating the statute, which means it can be a temporary restraining order or a preliminary injunction or a permanent injunction, ordering whoever it is to cease distribution of the material. I don't know if you watched the Pam and Tommy series that was, it's really well done, but, you know, Pamela Anderson's whole lawsuit where the video of her and Tommy Lee was distributed.
Well, I didn't watch that, but I watched her documentary.
Yeah, yeah. And so the court can also award attorney's fees and costs to the prevailing party. And this is, you know, a civil cause of action. There is a criminal charge that could be brought by the state, but this is a civil cause of action. So when we're talking about stuff and reading what's alleged in the complaint, we don't know both sides of the story yet, obviously, but it is a civil case. So this is a more likely than not, this isn't beyond a reasonable doubt type of proof.
Also, like under this one, she could get any other relief available at law. That was just the extra stuff that she could get, like a temporary restraining order.
If this goes to jury trial, the way the jury instruction would read would be that Ariana intentionally distributed, and then it would say by however means, so whatever was specific that's being alleged, photographs, films, videotapes of Rachel, and that Rachel did not consent to the distribution of the materials, and that Ariana knew or reasonably should have known that Rachel had a reasonable expectation that it would remain private. And that the video exposed an intimate body part of Rachel's and showed her engaging in one of those acts, including masturbation, and that Rachel was harmed, and that Ariana's conduct was a substantial factor in causing Rachel's harm.
Okay, the next cause of action, this is again against Tom and Ariana, is for invasion of privacy. And in California, there are four types of invasion of privacy causes of action. There's public disclosure of private facts, intrusion into private matters, misappropriation of a person's name or likeness, and portraying a person in a false light. And I think her cause of action here is most likely under number two, which is intrusion into private matters. And the elements of that are an intentional intrusion, physical or otherwise, into plaintiff's private life, seclusion, or solitude that would be highly objectionable to a reasonable person and is the cause of an adverse effect on the plaintiff. So this includes like eavesdropping, again, wiretapping, spying, but also things that aren't necessarily that obvious. It also says it makes any person who captures or attempts to capture offensive images of another person engaging in private or personal activity or intimate images responsible for up to treble damages, punitive damages, payment of a civil fine, disgorgement of any profits from related commercial activity. So it's like if they sold it or something, as well as an award of attorney's fees and expenses.
And that count, the intrusion invasion of privacy, is that just against Tom or is that also against Ariana?
No, that's against both.
Against both. Yeah. So those jury instructions would read that Rachel had a reasonable expectation of privacy in the act of performing whatever she was doing in the video with Tom, and that Tom and or Ariana intentionally intruded into that, and that Tom and or Ariana's intrusion would be highly offensive to a reasonable person, and that Rachel was harmed, and that Tom and or Ariana's conduct was a substantial factor in causing Rachel's harm. the California pattern jury instructions say in deciding whether or not Rachel had a reasonable expectation of privacy in the act she was performing in the video, you should consider, among other factors, the identity of the defendants and the extent to which other persons had access to, like I was saying, if she was doing this in a public place and then had Tom on, she wouldn't have an expectation of privacy. And then the means by which the intrusion occurred. And then the jury instructions say, in deciding whether an intrusion is highly offensive to a reasonable person, you must consider, among other factors, the extent of the intrusion, Tom and or Ariana's motives and goals, and the setting in which the intrusion occurred.
To clarify, this one doesn't require any sexual act being performed or anything. It's anything where you would imagine that your conversation or whatever is private. And if that got out and someone was like eavesdropping intentionally, it would be highly offensive to you. So it's not only having phone sex or whatever. It can include very private conversations that someone is like wiretapping your phone to hear. So it doesn't have to have that sexual element. I just wanted to clarify. Whereas the other one did, the revenge porn one does.
So the next is intentional infliction of emotional distress. And that's against all the defendants. So Sandoval, Ariana, and then the unnamed Does. And Ceci, you want to talk about this one for a little bit? And then I pulled some examples of where California courts have found this type.
Yeah. So it's if the defendant's conduct was outrageous and the outrageous actions must be considered outside of the bounds of decency. The defendant has to be willful and intentional in their behavior, and they either intended to cause you emotional distress or acted with reckless disregard for your well-being. And then as the plaintiff, you suffered severe emotional distress due to the defendant's conduct. In other words, your emotional distress has to be more than just annoyance or hurt feelings. It must be severe distress, meaning it must be profound or long-lasting to the point that no reasonable person should be expected to endure it. So it's an intentional tort, and it's, I mean, this one's kind of funky, but it has to be just someone does something so outrageous that it causes the other emotional distress, and that can include feelings of suffering, anguish, shock, grief, fright, humiliation, anxiety, worry, and more. And you do not have to experience any physical injury to bring a claim of intentional infliction of emotional distress. Oh, you also don't have to prove conclusively that the defendant intended to harm you. Instead, you only have to show that the actions were intentional.
Okay, so I'm reading the jury instructions again. I always start with the jury instructions when I'm either evaluating any type of claim, because that's what the jury is going to have to look at to decide. It's just lays everything out simply. So here, the California pattern jury instructions would say something like this. Rachel claims that Tom and Ariana's conduct caused her to suffer severe emotional distress. To establish this claim, Rachel must prove all of the following: that Tom, Ariana, defendant's conduct was outrageous, and that the defendants intended to cause Rachel emotional distress, or that the defendants, meaning Tom, Ariana, and whoever, acted with reckless disregard of the probability that Rachel would suffer emotional distress, knowing that Rachel was present when the conduct occurred, and that Rachel suffered severe emotional distress, and that the defendant's conduct was a substantial factor in causing Rachel's severe emotional distress. The trial court determines whether a defendant's conduct may be reasonably regarded to be so extreme and outrageous as to permit recovery. And then the jury determines whether the conduct has been extreme and outrageous to result in liability. Otherwise stated, the court determines whether severe emotional stress can be found, and the jury determines whether the evidence has in fact existed, if that makes sense. And so it's generally very hard to prove these types of claims. And I wanted to find some examples of where the court has found in California what can constitute severe distress. And the California Supreme Court has set a high bar for that. And so they've said severe emotional distress means emotional distress of such substantial quality or enduring quality that no reasonable person in civilized society should be expected to endure it. And there are some examples here. California courts found where a television reporter interviewed three young children on camera with no adult present concerning the murder of two playmates who lived next door and about which the children were previously unaware.
There was a patient who adequately alleged that an anesthesiologist engaged in extreme and outrageous conduct after patient complained of waking up during surgery. Anesthesiologist brought container of blood and tissue that had been removed during surgery into recovery room and showed it to her.
And then this case was crazy to me. A plaintiff was severely injured from a fall from a cliff above the Sacramento River. And even though he couldn't recall exactly how or why he fell, he sued his two companions, asserting multiple causes of action, including intentional infliction of emotional distress. The conduct alleged included the following: causing the plaintiff to fall over the edge of the cliff, knowing he was in need of assistance, the ability to summon aid with minimal effort and no risk of danger, and then making a conscious decision not to summon aid for selfish and or unreasonable reasons, and taking steps to delay the fact that he fell off a cliff, like removing his stuff from the cliffside. And the court said, yeah, that's sufficient to state a cause of action for intentional infliction of emotional distress. So intentional means more than non-accidental conduct. The wrongful act must also be, and this is in this context of intentional infliction of emotional distress, which can also be reckless. The wrongful act must be directed at the plaintiff or be in the plaintiff's presence. And there's just some weird case law on this too. So in a California case, a defendant therapist had a sexual relationship with the plaintiff's wife while she was his patient, and the plaintiff sued for intentional infliction of emotional distress. And then summary judgment for the therapist was affirmed. And it said, here the declarations established that the sexual encounter in question was an accident and in no way directed at plaintiff. I don't know how that works. And then furthermore, with respect to the husband's claim that the therapist bragged about it, the declaration showed that it was the husband who approached the therapist and pressed him for details and exactly what happened. And then there was no cause of action for intentional infliction of emotional distress against a defendant doctor that could be based on allegations that the defendant doctor artificially inseminated the plaintiff's wife without his consent and was the natural father of the resulting child. Like, what? Facts are nuts. There is a case where it was alleged that two officers sent accident scene pictures of a decapitated decedent in emails to people unrelated to the accident investigation with the intention of causing family members emotional distress. And they pled a cause of action for intentional infliction of emotional distress, even though they were not present when the pictures were disseminated. And the court found that that was properly pled.
I think that's what Vanessa Bryant won her case. Mm. And it's a very similar set of facts.
And then malice is not essential. So a malicious or evil purpose is not essential to liability. And this is for the reckless element. So it's sufficient that the defendant devoted little or no thought to the probable consequences of his or her conduct.
I think we should stop here on the law and get into the complaint. Hopefully that's a good little primer on the law of the causes of action that Rachel has brought here. So as we go through the facts, you can have that in the back of your head.
Yeah.
All right. We're stopping here. This is going to be a two-part episode. To listen to what was alleged in the complaint, go to part two, which should be out now or very shortly.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloan Stevens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction. Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloan.
Ever Googled your own name? Prepare for a shock, because your personal info, including addresses and phone numbers, is out there, especially with the recent hacks at some big phone and healthcare companies. But here's where Aura steps in. Aura scans the dark web for your sensitive information and sends real-time alerts. Aura also actively requests that your information be removed from data broker sites, putting you back in control. Aura provides you with a complete online safety toolkit, credit and transaction monitoring, a secure password manager, a privacy-enhancing VPN, parental controls, and more. Try Aura risk-free with a 14-day trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety. Rest easy with Aura. Visit aura.com/safety today.
The Bravo Docket is part of the Acast Creator Network.